Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Squawker Talker Football Podcast. My name is Jake Entwistle, and today we're going to be talking about some London-based Premier League teams, pre-season and transfers included, as well as a little discussion of a certain Gareth Bale. But before we do all that, I have to introduce my guests, and we have a full quota today. Three guests joining me in the round table, which is nicely air-conditioned, so you don't have to worry about us. We will survive this podcast. The first of which is Chief Writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt. Welcome.
Hashtag justice for Bale, hashtag free Bale, hashtag man bun.
The second guest on the Squawker Talker is Chief Editor Will Hall. Welcome. Have you got any hashtags you'd like to let us know about?
No.
No, brilliant. That's what I wanted to hear. And then returning us to full quota is the man behind every transfer graphic you've seen on the Squawker account, social media expert, Tom Green. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. I also do not have any hashtags, though.
As I said, Mo has got enough for all of us. So we'll move straight in. And as I teased at the beginning, a London-ish theme based on a lot of rumours picking up to do with the North London clubs in particular. And this week as well, with listeners' questions, the themes were similar too. And the first question we have is from Bamideli Harry, which you can assume is a reference to Delhi Alley, therefore a Spurs fan, has said, if Fekir is joining Betis, which we now know he did in a £17.8 million deal, does that mean Lo Celso is now going to join Spurs? And this partnered with the fact that Dani Ceballos is being linked with a loan move to Arsenal, means that we're seeing fairly similar midfielders.
Basically creative. The same player. It's like two letters away from being anagrams of each other.
Well, there you
both
go.
Both have Rabatis on their CVs.
Yeah.
About like the 3 months separating them in terms of age as well.
Well, there you go. So yeah. Two very similar midfielders could be moving to North London. And the main question was, the discussion that we're going to do is, which one would you sign? But before we dive straight into that question, Mo, can you give us any info about Giovanni Lo Celso and why Spurs, now that Fekir's gone, do you think this move is going to be the next one of Pochettino, who said this morning that he's not actually responsible for many of the transfers?
Yeah, I do. I think this is exactly the kind of player that Spurs have been trying to sign since they signed Lamella and then accidentally turned him into a workhorse. Like if you remember Lamella at Roma, he was this very creative, blisteringly quick winger, a really dangerous wing forward. And then obviously at Spurs, something happened and he became just a runner, like a Pedro. But Lo Celso is this incredibly creative. He's not quite as direct as Lamella was, but he's, you play him in central midfield for Argentina sometimes. If you're playing a Pep Guardiola style of football, you can play him central midfield, but really he's a number 10 in the classic sort of sense.
A warning sign, isn't it?
Maybe not the classic sort of thing, but he drifts between the lines very well. He's got a great eye for goal. He's got a lovely pass in him. He's a really, really gifted attacking player, creative playmaker. You can see that where he would fit into the Spurs lineup purely because if Eriksen really is, trying to set up his exit, which he appears to be, he'd replace Eriksen easily. And if not directly replace Eriksen, you could play them together maybe. I mean, there's a lot of options. Essentially, what Spurs need is more options because their squad is very thin. And what Lo Celso gives them is creativity and options. He's a really, really good player. It's a lot of money for Spurs. But then, they've got a good squad. They just needed two or three really quality additions, and he's one of them.
So that was another part of the question. So as I said, Bamideli Harry, thank you for the perfect start to the podcast. He said, does anyone want Eriksen? Which is, again, we've said...
Florentino Perez does.
Yeah, the links have cooled down a bit. But if Spurs get Lo Celso and keep Eriksen, and also Toby Alderweireld, who was mentioned quite a lot on last week's podcast, where does this leave Spurs themselves, before we move on to what Dani Ceballos would mean for Arsenal potentially? That would be Ndombele, Jack Clark. Ryan Sessegnon has been another deal that could be rumoured to be... Is this quite a good transfer window for a team that for 2 years didn't spend a penny?
Yeah, it would make for the most exciting season during Pochettino's time at Spurs. It does sort of eliminate an excuse in terms of the lack of signings, because they need to be challenging for the Premier League title. And they need to be challenging, well, they don't need to be, but It's a feasible ambition for them to challenge to try and win either the Premier League or the Champions League this season, having come so close to winning the Champions League last season and being maybe not the closest team, well, definitely not the closest team to Liverpool and Chelsea and Man City in terms of points. Obviously, Chelsea overtook them right at the last, but in terms of like cohesive quality of the squad, they are the closest ones to those to those two big boys.
Especially with Havertz leaving Chelsea.
Yeah. And that's a hell of a lot of squad depth they've now got now, which has been the other big sort of perceived weakness of Spurs during Pochettino's time.
Mm. Vincent Janssen's now left, though.
For Monterrey, I think, who might be playing in the Club World Cup.
Who play in the shadow of a lovely mountain. So, you know, good for Vincent.
Yeah, good move. Scenic route. Tom, do you have any thoughts on Spurs and these signings?
I was going to add to that Vincent Janssen point that Spurs are currently riding on a massive if next season, and that if being, can Harry Kane stay injury free throughout the entirety of the season? Yeah. I know they obviously have Llorente as backup, but at the end of the day, I do like Llorente, but he doesn't compare to Harry Kane. He's not going to get the amount of goals that Harry Kane does get. Again, I know Harry Kane like isn't necessarily injury prone, but he has had his periods out throughout the last couple of seasons. So
I think they've Llorente, I think, has just seen his contract expire, but there are suggestions they might re-sign him. And back. I don't know what the latest is on that, but it's looking like
That's even like worse then. Who's their backup then?
This is where the old Son and Moura.
Well, yeah, I mean,
duo come in.
That's it. And if you sign Lo Celso, then you can put like Son or Lucas up front and still have Son or Lucas on the wing, because then you've also got Lo Celso as well. You could argue one could have made the case that they look better without Harry Kane for a large part of last season. I mean,
that was going to be my point, is that perhaps it would actually be good not to think that you need to rely on him for 38 games. And by bringing in the likes of, remember, we haven't even mentioned the person they have signed yet, Tanguy Ndombele, who assisted with his first touch.
That was some part. Although it's quite funny, actually, because Harry Kane said after the match, that's what we've missed at times, the pass and the final third. I thought, it's Christian Eriksen, you've forgotten he exists. That's literally all he does, is the pass and the final third. But it was a very good pass from Ndombele. I mean, and he's a very special player. We've known this for a long time, and it's really a game changer. I mean, I said this in a piece I wrote. It's a game changing signing for Spurs to get him, not just because he's good, but because they beat big clubs to him, like elite clubs.
I think the question marks are fullback as well, considering the statement they issued confirming, this was a week ago now, confirming that Danny Rose is not included on the tour, so that he could sort of basically go to job interviews with other clubs. And then obviously Kieran Trippier are going to Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd work this. Well, you could easily work it out, but possibly the first player to play under Sean Dyche and Diego Simeone there. Yeah. So that's clear.
Mo, didn't you mention the Pokemon evolution?
It's a Pokemon evolution. Sean Dyche to Pochettino to Diego Simeone. This is he's gone to progressively more impressive coaches, all in the same kind of mold of this pressing, intense football. It's like, good for trips, man.
Didn't you once wrote an article, how Burnley could become Premier League's Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
And again, the headline is very strong. It wasn't literally like that, but it's now quite poetic that Kieran Trippier, who obviously was very impressive at Burnley, is now at Atletico Madrid himself.
I think he'll do quite well there, just as quick aside, because I think defensively he'll be all right, but then crossing the ball to Morata, I think they'll do quite well. But anyway.
Yeah, when the move went through, you made that point, and it instantly reminded me of, you instantly reminded us of Azpilicueta when Morata made that lightning quick start.
Yeah.
I remember he was literally giving the same assist, Ultimate Times. We had the heat map of the assist, and it was the same point, a deepish cross, not a fullback, cutback, sorry. It was just a deep cross, which is what Trippier does, three touches, whip it in. Yeah. And if you've got Morata and or Diego Costa in there, and then now Joao Felix
or someone. Morata's last great game for Chelsea was in the FA Cup with Hudson-Odoi, whipping two crosses, and he scored twice. Yeah. So, you know,
it was worth, as Spurs as a transfer window in the whole, it's definitely worth talking about them. Trippier, who was criticised a lot, and if this move happened after the 2018 World Cup, we all would have said, well, that's it. Madrid have got another Beckham sort of thing. Whereas he had a bit of an off season, so Spurs to offload him, with Juan Foyth maybe being the backup right back now.
Yeah. Sissoko, another option, I guess.
Maybe we'll see a lot of 3-3-5-2 perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Danny Rose potentially moving on. And then it looks like that means definitely if Sessegnon is bought, he will be the left back iteration of Ryan Sessegnon, which in an attacking team will still allow him to get forward and show those qualities of of, again, his being able to drive into the box.
I mean, yeah, fullback has changed. It's not the same position it used to be. And if you're in a, like you said, if you're in a good team, a really good team, playing the fullback can be, I mean, look at Jordi Alba, Andy Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, I mean, that's so.
The fullback is sexy now.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
So Sessegnon bringing sexy back. Sessegnon. Would be nice to see. you've thrown me off the final point I was going to say then with that last comment.
Well, I think you threw yourself off.
Yeah, I did. I led us down a path that shouldn't have been trodden. But someone, a young player that is also a winger that has been now put as a left back. Will, you mentioned this when we spoke about Bayern Munich's quest for the robbery replacements. Alphonso Davies was playing at left back in their recent friendly, and him and Kingsley Coman were just occupying the final third of the pitch. So left back for Sessegnon in a great team, obviously in Fulham, they tried to play expansive football, but it didn't work out. That move to Spurs could see him remind people of his talents, which he definitely does have. But leaving Spurs there, as I said, we move on to Arsenal as well in this North London theme. Their most recent friendly was a penalty defeat to Real Madrid, which saw Marco Asensio potentially ruled out for the season. And now this has cast doubt, despite, in my opinion, not really adding up too much. It's now cast a bit of doubt on whether this Danny Ceballos loan deal will move through. The latest reports I read on that were that he was in London doing medicals and finalising a deal. But if Lo Celso to Spurs adds a key ingredient that they may or may not lose if Eriksen were to move on, what does Danny Ceballos add to the Arsenal midfield? Because a lot of people are excited about him, including myself. But why is it an exciting signing?
Give me a D. Give me an R. Give me an I. Give me a B. B-L-I-N-G. Dribbling. This man dribbles the ball for fun. He's like a newborn baby. It's just incredible. And Arsenal, as we've all been over many times, just don't have anyone. Apart from Iwobi, who's very good, have no one who can dribble the ball. No one who can carry the ball up the field. As we saw, I mean, you were saying about the friendly last night that they couldn't get out, right? Second half. And it's just, you need someone that can dribble the ball, can carry the ball. And someone that can do that from central midfield, it's almost doubly as valuable. Obviously, wingers can dribble and that's great. But if you have someone who can do it from the middle of the park through the congestion that is the middle of the park, it's genuinely a game changer and the sort of player that can break open a team. And if you're thinking, why, if Danny Ceballos is so good, why around would you want to sell him? We have no idea. No one knows. Well, Zidane doesn't seem to like him.
Well, this is the thing. It's going to be a loan deal. Yeah. And again, the reason the North London theme is quite prevalent in this is because the major reports are that he was offered to both Arsenal and Spurs were both interested.
Yeah.
And what I perceive from it is that Spurs have not gone through the deal because they couldn't secure a buy-on clause.
So this is also claimed about AC Milan as well. So according to reports, Real Madrid are only willing to offer terms on Danny Ceballos that basically no sort of elite Champions League club should be considering because of his impressive Euro showing. He's only available on loan with no option to buy permanently end of it. So it's the sort of deal that we see, you saw Everton go after a couple of times last summer with Andre Gomez and Kurt Zouma. And that Kurt Zouma one's kind of come back to sting them now that he's staying at Chelsea now and it's left them short at centre-half. Liverpool historically did it with Nuri Sahin from Real Madrid. That didn't go so well. And yeah, it's said to be the reason that AC Milan didn't push harder to complete this deal. And you would assume, like you were alluding to a minute ago, it's why Spurs have opted to pursue Lo Celso instead. But all of that said, there's clearly sense in Arsenal's optimism that they'll be able to convince Ceballos over the course of the season to himself push for a permanent transfer, maybe if it goes really, really well. But nothing he said would suggest that his mind won't be set on breaking Madrid's first team at the end of it so far, really.
I mean, the thing with that is Zidane clearly doesn't rate him for whatever reason, doesn't want to use him, prefers other players, which doesn't really make sense when you look at how good he is, but that's Zidane's preference. So, this is the loan deal to me screams of Florentino Perez knows how good this guy is and doesn't want to actually lose him on the off chance that, let's say, Zidane gets sacked, which frankly at the moment doesn't look like that far-fetched a proposition.
Based on,
well,
the two friendlies.
not the performance, just the fact that he's arguing with Perez already about Gareth Bale. It's like he's contradicting what the president is saying. It's this whole, he's gone a bit rogue. It's rogue Zidane now.
He's clearly like
he's got £300 million squad.
That was a power play. The comments about Bale, which we'll obviously come onto later, and it does suggest, like you're saying here, there's something going on. There's a lot of politics.
Again, we'll talk Pogba and Eriksen. That he wants Pogba. Perez is like, let's just get Eriksen. He's actually available, and they're arguing over that. But so Perez or whoever is in charge of transfers at Real Madrid is obviously saying, okay, look, let's just make sure we keep this guy just because he is amazing. Now, if Zidane's still there next year and he's playing and he's not going anywhere, then you probably will see the basket sold, because ultimately, they can't keep loaning him out one season after one season. They'll destroy him. But, for now, I think they'd much rather just on the off chance that Zidane goes, they can, because he's a special player. I mean, in 2016-17, he was the last player, the last time he was a first team regular. He was one of only three players in La Liga to complete 66 tackles, 80 dribbles, and he's one of only three players to complete over 55 for tackles, dribbles, and interceptions. He had 66 tackles, 80 dribbles, and 57 interceptions. The other two were fullbacks. So he's putting up fullback stat lines in the middle of the park for Betis, who aren't that great.
He's the second most fouled La Liga player in that period, per 90 minutes, after Neymar.
Yeah, he's utterly ridiculous. He can do everything. If he settles quickly in North London and you watch him play for Arsenal, people will genuinely be baffled. How is this guy not already a world star? Because he's so good at everything.
He gives Arsenal everything that double pivot Santi Cazorla, that iteration, gives them.
Not as nice as Santi, but who is?
Not as nice and only 1 foot.
Yeah.
But Arsenal need as many feet as they can find. Just a quick thing on that. I think getting him on loan and not pushing for this buyback option is actually relatively smart. And on the little Squawker Arsenal documentary thing that we did, I said that Arsenal have a chance to be a bit cleverer in this window. And the Tierney signing represented that. Just saying, let's just get Ceballos for a year, because a year of Ceballos is better than no year without him. Even if Real Madrid are using it to just leverage his price next season.
It might be the difference between top four and not top four.
And Arsenal aren't in a position to try and identify these, get players of that quality and spend the money to do so. So if you can get Ceballos for one season, and as you said, it can tip you over the edge.
I mean,
made the Europa League final last season. If Ceballos is the difference in the final, who knows? Yeah, as you said, then you have the money. Maybe you just sign him permanently. Or if you just say, right, now we identify a new target.
I mean, Dani Ceballos is... Ceballos, Torreira and Xhaka is potentially a really good midfield three. And what's good about it is you can play them all in a two as well, in any sort of combination. And you've got so much quality there. Arsenal can...
Although Granit Xhaka has come back looking very shaky. In the Real Madrid game, played... a massive role in both goals, but was spinning uncontrollably at the sight of any Real Madrid midfielder that looked to bear down on him. But that'll be enough on North London. So all in all, Dani Ceballos and Lo Celso, if they both came to North London, that is some really, again, to use the word, they're sexy signings.
That's a lot of quality in the
Premier. They're adding some serious flair. And we've mentioned the deals that Tottenham are potentially looking to finalise. Arsenal, obviously, you have Dani Ceballos mentioned, a loan deal. Wilfried Zaha / any other extra winger. Everton is mentioned, as in Everton Cebolina, not the entire club in the Premier League. And then also Kieran Tierney. So the final question to wrap up this section is, if all of those deals that are wrapped up that look like they're going to be finalised, who do you think has had the quote-unquote better transfer window? And then which team will then finish higher as a result in the 2019-20 season? Tom, you're mulling it over, so I'm going to go to you first.
First of all, I think, assuming all deals go through, given the budget that Arsenal have had and almost telegraphed to the world that they've had this small budget, I'd say maybe relative, Arsenal have had a good transfer window. I still think Tottenham's is probably better, especially given the fact that they didn't sign anyone last season.
I thought you were coming around to Arsenal were having a better transfer.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and then I changed my mind halfway through.
That's what you should never do if you're taking penalties.
Yeah. I just think, especially with like Ndombele, Lo Celso, let me go back to it. Tottenham's transfer window, I guess, can be dependent upon whether they can keep Eriksen and Alderweireld. Obviously, Eriksen looks like he is going to go, so... maybe not Eriksen. If they can keep Alderweireld, I think that would be a massive boost to their team next season. So on that basis, I will go with Tottenham. But if they lose both of them and fail to replace Alderweireld specifically, then I will go with Arsenal.
Cool. And then where does that leave you in the table standing?
I still think Tottenham will be miles ahead of Arsenal.
So are we assuming Arsenal signs Zaha?
Yeah, because that seems...
In this theoretical assessment.
Yeah, I think the Zaha... These aren't just like... It seems quite substantial interest.
Of course, yeah. I'm just sort of clarifying what we're assessing. Yeah, so assuming everything goes well for both clubs.
Yeah,
and in Spurs' case, it would mean, as Tom sort of spelled out, they're keeping Christian.
Yeah, so imagine the perfect. Both clubs have the perfect window based on the reports that we've seen widely reported, and that's staying and going.
Yeah. So, and the Christian Eriksen, I should say, does seem more likely to stay now. I think that's my reading of the situation. He broke character to speak out, basically telling Real Madrid to come and sign them. They haven't done so. Obviously, that could essentially, I mean, it's dependent on whether Real Madrid can offload someone, such as Bale, for instance, and then free up funds and then go shopping themselves. But I think they will both have very good windows, but Arsenal were in more desperate need of surgery in terms of their first team, so I would say that Arsenal have improved more in these...
Yeah,
in these ideal windows,
despite the centre back that they may be signing, I didn't mention Saliba. Obviously, looks like that's going to be completed, but that will be next season. The same. Yeah. There's actually, when I was preparing this as well, there's actually really similar parallels between both clubs, in that they're both going to be signing a player that will be loaned back. They both signed a really young player that might not be bedded in. They've got their star signing that they needed. Yeah. It's quite fun.
Arsenal do still need a centre back immediately.
That's what I mean. So that's, I wasn't going to say anything. Yeah,
and for that reason, Spurs will finish above them in the table.
Yeah,
but Spurs, the golfing class is best illustrated by their sort of objectives this season. Spurs will be to win the Premier League, because top four finishes they've probably become numb to by now, or the Champions League.
That was quick.
Arsenal's well, it's five seasons. Arsenal's ambitions, could be put one way, is to finish above Spurs. And that would probably mean top four.
Unless Spurs finish 19th.
Yeah.
You don't want to finish one place above. Mo, final thoughts on that section?
Yeah, I think Spurs have had the better window irregardless, because they signed Ndombele, who's just such a special all-around talent who was built for the Premier League. And Arsenal's comparable signing would only be on loan with no guarantee that they get him again, with Ceballos. If Arsenal signed Ceballos permanently, it would be a different matter. You could maybe wear it differently.
That's literally not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So so for me, it's Spurs had the better window. Much as I like what Arsenal have done and what they can do potentially as well. I think, you add dribbling with Zaha or a winger and Ceballos, that's really good. But I just think Spurs have added, just if they had De Celso, and that's too much quality. Into really, really, really good players. Bought future world-class players. And I just think that gives them the edge. They'll finish above Arsenal because they're a better team than Arsenal. And I think as much as Arsenal have improved, and if they get those players, they will improve, it's not going to maybe be enough to catch them. And
there's still some gaping chasms in the Arsenal squad that are yet to be filled. And Wilfried Zaha alone may not be able to solve them. So the conclusion is North London will remain white for the 29-20 season. But next, we'll be moving on to some more pre-season stuff and just plucking the ideas of the guests and things that they've noticed in pre-season so far. So join us after the break for that. Remain in London for the time being with our first little pre-season learning, and we're going to be going to West Ham connoisseur Tom Green for this. West Ham, interestingly, obviously Sebastian Haller is the major signing made, a club record target man, finally ridding yourselves of Andy Carroll in that regard and getting someone who, for the most part, people are very excited to watch in the Premier League. Luka Jovic's partner in crime last season, and some people feel that Luka Jovic's goals actually took the spotlight away from Haller, who was one of the most elite target men in Europe, let alone the Bundesliga. So he hasn't played yet, so you haven't learned anything on him, but was that signing needed based on what you've been seeing and reading about West Ham wise?
Well, it was 100% needed, especially after the sale of Marko Arnautovic. There's that infamous joke going around that what happens every season, that since Golden Sullivan took over, West Ham have had about 40 odd strikers, and none of them have really like settled to become West Ham's main striker. So hopefully he will be the first one that in years to come you can look back and say, hey, he was a fantastic signing and a West Ham legend.
West Ham legendary status. So that's
I mean, if he's the record signing, you'd expect, not expect, but you'd like to hope that he will become a West Ham legend.
Firing the hammers into the Champions League and beyond.
Well, maybe not that far. Personally, from watching pre-season, West Ham have looked very, very poor up front. Especially in the Asia Cup. I know, obviously, you can't look too much into pre-season, but scoring one goal in two games was probably, zero goals out of open play, but one goal from a penalty was pretty poor. I like Hernandez. I think...
he's the new number nine, isn't he?
Yeah. I think he's obviously a great player. I just question whether he fits into how West Ham plays sometimes. Like, a lot of the teams that Hernandez played for did have large amounts of possession and dominated the game. Whereas with West Ham, it's often the other way around. Not that we get dominated per se, but we don't have large amounts of possession. So a lot of the time, the ball will be booted up to the striker, whose role will be to hold it up and bring other people into play. I don't personally think that Hernandez, that's his strongest point of play. So hopefully Haller, with his physicality and somewhat pace, will be able to do that a bit more. And then maybe Hernandez can fit in and be that poacher who plays either alongside him or potentially a
comes
sub,
on in the
80th
sub, minute
yeah.
to get his trademark 6-yard flick on
so
header.
Although Hernandez is, like you said, the new number nine, I do think that Haller will be the primary striker next season, especially if we are only playing one up top. But a lot of the things that do worry me next season are the fact that I think West Ham's starting 11 is stronger than this time last year, but I do think that West Ham don't have the depth to challenge for a higher position in the table that is at the end of the season, especially when we sell Obiang, and as it looks like we're not going to be replacing him. So that leaves us with just the midfield, the midfielders of Rice, Noble and Sanchez. Sanchez, who has been...
People have probably forgotten he is actually West Ham, right?
People who don't support West Ham have probably forgotten, but all the West Ham fans who have watched him in pre-season, he has been abysmal.
is he not improved at all then?
Well, to be fair, he was out injured for most of last season. And again, it is pre-season, so it's probably harsh to judge him. But I think he's had errors leading to goals in all three of the games that we've played.
My goodness.
I think he wasn't great in the... Was it the World Cup that he wasn't
great? Yeah, that too as well.
I think he was named as one of the worst players at the World
Cup. Awful performance.
And then signed by West Ham.
Again, I'm willing to give Sanchez a chance to do it in a position.
You've also left off your midfielders list, someone that we spoke about before as well, Super Jackie Wilshere.
I think if I hear another person say the phrase... If he stays injury-free, I'm going to punch them. I love Jack Wilshere, and he makes a massive difference to West Ham's team when he plays in there. But let's face it, he's not going to play 20-plus games next season. I'd love to see him do it, but every year it's the same thing, and I just can't see it happening.
You don't want to get your hopes up. Someone that, again, another signing that has arrived that is exciting, though, Pablo Fornals.
Oh, yeah, Fornals. Yeah, that's going to be really good. So are him and Lanzini and potentially even Yarmolenko playing in a free behind Haller or Hernandez. Like, Oh, and Anderson. Yeah.
Your best player.
Well, that's literally the amount of attacking options the West Ham
so
have
many,
now.
I'm West not used Ham, to it. Yeah, an abundance of options. Tom's gone giddy.
Well, West Ham should be genuinely good fun to watch in attacking season, because you look at those four players all playing off a striker as associative and as selfless as Haller is, and as excellent at bringing other people into play as Haller is. I mean, forget Hernandez. I mean, he might not even get on the pitch. They've got four genuinely great options. I mean, Felipe Anderson with someone to play off is kind of terrifying when you think about it. Because last season, the guy would dribble up to the end of the box and then there's no one. What can he do there? Up and shoot. Now he can play 1-2s.
Or Mikel Antonio being used in every position.
Of course, Antonio as well, yeah. I think Pellegrini has actually alluded to the fact that Antonio will be a striker next season. Yeah. So I guess we will have a striking three options of Haller, Hernandez and Antonio. Antonio just needs to work on his shooting and finishing.
Yeah,
his physicality and pace is fine. But
for certain situations, and remember that Man United game that West Ham should have won last season.
Yeah.
He ran them ragged up front. So you see West Ham.
But there are the shots that people don't see, which are the ones which just skyrocket to Rosie. But again, I really like Antonio, and like you said, his physicality and pace is almost unrivaled. He can just charge past people.
West Ham for next season, what are you, if you're going to be optimistic, what do you think is the maximum of this squad?
I still think we'll be below Everton and Wolves. Oh, well, actually, if we're going best case scenario, most optimistic, then I guess maybe trying to get a European position in that 7th or 8th spot, depending on obviously if 7th and 8th are in fact European spots on the Cubs. So that would be my ideal situation next season.
But what do you really think?
I think we'll finish roughly maybe the same, maybe a bit higher, maybe 9th, 10th.
Top half, secure. And then
maybe not 10th, maybe 9th or 8th, sorry. Maybe even that 7th. So 9, 8 or 7 is where I'm aiming for next season.
9, 8 or 7. So mid-table for West Ham,
yeah,
despite
with
a £45 million striker.
With some hopeful giant killings in the work and doing the double over tournament.
That's the dream. Moving on from West Ham and their 7th, 8th or 9th finish next season. Again, I said it was London themed, and guess where we're going next? Chelsea Rakuten Cup champions.
Yep.
If you didn't know, after a 2-1 win against Barcelona, Frenkie de Jong making an appearance, 100% pass accuracy, which I'm sure went down very well.
Naturally.
But he wasn't the star of the show, because
Ricky Pritchard is the star of the show.
Edit that out. Tammy Abraham looks to be ending Chelsea's number 9 curse by rounding Barcelona goalkeeper.
Yeah, and has taken the shirt.
He genuinely has been cursed.
But it's playing well despite that.
But,
yeah.
Again, the reason we're focusing on Chelsea, despite my sort of, again, attempts to make it fun and interesting by introducing the topic, the real reason is because Owen Griffiths has said, by the time of recording, and obviously we asked for this before the Chelsea game, by the time of recording, Chelsea will have faced Barcelona. Given the games played so far, how do you think the lone youth army will be incorporated into the side? And who do you think's done enough to stay in the squad this season? So that's where the likes of Abraham, who scored against Barcelona, Mason Mount, who Lampard himself has said is impressed in the season. Will, we're going to you on this one. Has anyone, do you think, made a big enough statement to break into Frank Lampard's starting 11?
Tammy Abraham taking that shirt is a statement in itself, and he obviously scored I think he opened the scoring against Barcelona in this week's game. Well, Frank Lampard's starting 11 is going to be the most interesting one hotly anticipated one on the opening day of the Premier League season, or the opening weekend. Another debate, shirt number debate that's cropped up, is the number 10 one, despite Willian's claims to have been offered it. Lampard's now come out and denied that. Which,
oh, did he?
Yeah.
I didn't see Lampard's quote.
He said that's not, I think he sort of said it's not been decided yet.
Yeah, which is never good.
It's going to be awkward when they reunite. I mean, so yeah, then taking the number 10 shirt, the fact that they supposedly had offered it would imply that Willian's status is going to increase in wake of Eden Hazard's departure. He's like low-key one of the most interesting players in the division, because in terms of statistical output, he's an elite player. He created the most chances per 90 minutes in the Premier League last season of any player to have started at least one game. Yeah, the flip side of that is only 3 goals and 6 assists, and the fact that not all of the fans really like him.
Understatement.
Yeah, and in fact, when you see these links to Barcelona and Manchester United, and you just sort of think, well, I mean, what are they seeing in
he's this? He's got a good agent
in this sort of slightly unpopular player. In terms of where he, and so coming back to this number 10 shirt thing, that would, you would think, be reflected in what lineup Frank Lampard goes for. Giroud's comments suggest the favoured lineup, even though we have seen a little bit of diamond action in pre-season, is the 4-3-2-1, which is kind of on the way out in terms of, it used to be super fashionable. I remember when Arsene Wenger was sort of around for his final seasons, but it's sort of being replaced by the 4-3-3. But anyway, so it looks like he'll go for that. And Tammy Abraham is probably competing with Giroud for that striker role. So that's quite easy to sort of
match-wise
there also. And then you've got those three slots behind where you expect to see Pulisic taking one of them. Pedro and Willian are the sort of more experienced. But you've also got Mason Mount, who I think played in that number 10 role against Barcelona yesterday. And then when they come back from injury, you've got Callum Hudson-Odoi, who's now just signed that new contract. Which is a big
fat contract.
Yeah,
Mason Mount. I thought,
and then you've also got Ruben Loftus-Cheek there, who could play in basically anyone, or as the striker in a sort of false nine.
Mount played behind the striker against Barcelona. He looked really, really impressive. He made lots of really interesting forward runs. Was kind of fearless with the ball. I would imagine, honestly, I think he'll get the 10. I think, given that Barkley has the 8, which is the Lampard shirt, which of course Mount would love.
Mason Mount, I can assure you, is not getting that number 10 shirt.
You don't think so?
No.
I don't know, mate.
It will definitely go. One, the Hudson-Odoi, well, in my opinion, Hudson-Odoi contract, the reason it hasn't been announced is because there were a lot of reports saying he was getting it.
Oh, okay.
He's signing that contract. They've not announced Willian. That, to me, is a sort of warning sign. And then, when Pulisic wore the number 24, Chelsea released a statement and loosed term statement saying that, remember, all squad numbers for this season are not official for next season.
Okay, so it's Pulisic then, isn't it?
Mate, we're forgetting about the big player who hasn't been mentioned, Van Ginkel. He's getting number 10. You heard it here first.
Has he not been just loaned out again?
No, he's still there.
He's still there.
Mate, that was a joke, by the way.
I think people will have been aware that was a joke.
Shout out Christensen. He's got the number 4. That's another squad number change that probably will stay. And I think he'll play a big part for Chelsea at the back. It'll be interesting to see what Lampard settles on with it back too, because I can't imagine David Luiz will be ahead of Rudiger and Christensen in Lampard's system. I mean, he's not Sarri, is he? So,
but I think David Luiz's value as a player.
Oh, I love David Luiz. I just think Lampard. I don't know if Lampard will value him as highly as Sarri clearly did. But I don't know. We'll see. Chelsea were good against Barcelona. They've got a high potential. But they've got a lot of potential in burst moments, because they've got a lot of players who can do that sort of thing. Mount, Pulisic, they can sort of be like without the ball, and then suddenly, bam, they have it, and they create 2 chances in like 3 minutes. And if Abraham can keep the composure up, man, the way he rounded to Stegen was really, I mean, obviously the ball was a defensive mistake from Barcelona, but the way he was like, showed his composure, didn't just slash it, it went round him.
He missed a good chance before.
That's something to regain after missing such an easy chance, to then regain your composure and just go around the goal. It's impressive. I hope he does well, because obviously he was kind of shortchanged in his last Premier League spell because he was playing for such a bad team in Swansea.
Yeah.
Didn't really do him any favours. And I think Chelsea, with all that creativity behind him, I think he could do pretty well.
And Ross Barkley is someone that I feel personally will play quite a big role in Chelsea's team. In all of the discussions we've had about Chelsea before in the articles, Lampard is, I'm pretty sure, is going to have one of the most rotated starting 11s of
the
season.
Which would make a huge difference from last season with Sarri. Yeah.
And that's why I think, when we've said like the antithesis of Sarri in that sense, is because, one, he's got so many players coming back that need to prove themselves because they've not been able to buy players. He can't do what Sarri did and say, I want this midfielder to play, and I'm going to play him, Jorginho. So Lampard comes in and has to work with what he has. Obviously, they signed Kovacic pertinently, but he was there. And then you've got all the players, as you mentioned, Will, coming back from injury. to then add it. So you could see for the first 10 games, yeah, this system settled.
Chelsea have found the new Tinker Man.
Before we do get too excited, though, I would not be surprised. And to quickly clear up on Willian, so Lampard said the decision's not been confirmed, so he probably will still get that number 10 shirt. But before you get excited about all these young players coming in, I wouldn't be surprised to, on the first day of the season, see Giroud up front, Pedro and Willian in the two wing slots behind.
Remember, it's against Man United.
Yeah, because you're not going to throw kids into that game, probably.
I think Lampard will, you know. I think he'll have faith.
That's what he's been...
Jody Morris is his number two, man. I think this is going to be a revolution at Chelsea this year, I think.
It's close, the game. So if the teams have been picked now with some youthful flair in it, I mean, you've got
certain players who haven't. I think Dominic Williams back in training.
No, he's, yeah. But that's the thing, is he might not. Maybe he would have played him, but he might not be fit enough in time.
Sure, yeah.
And then you've got Conte, who's obviously, I think, still recovering from that knee injury that apparently made him unfit for the final and still ran the entire midfield. So may as well just play him, even with one knee. But, and just to clarify on your comments about exciting, heavily rotated teams aren't necessarily exciting in a positive sense, but it will be a sort of roulette each week. Yeah. So that it might not bear any fruit in it being rotated, but the excitement comes in, like, what is he going to play? I think he's going to play about four different formations, let alone have different players.
It generally doesn't work as well. I think for Guardiola, we've made the point previously that he's really the only top level manager who's made changing his lineup every week result in consistent results.
It's because you have an overarching system that binds everything. Yeah. So when you're just changing players, like just for the sake of changing players, it doesn't, you lack coherence. But if you have an overarching system in place, you can do that. You can rotate players and everyone knows what they're doing all the time. Klopp was the same at Dortmund, kind of, but his squad wasn't as big. Mm.
And that's the thing Lampard was criticised for, actually, last season, was like, how do you actually play?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it give it to Harry Wilson even and Bielsa, shoot from 40
even
yards?
Even Bielsa couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, all those spies were worth nothing. And perhaps that is Frank Lampard's genius in itself.
Keep them guessing.
But we'll move on from Chelsea and the fact that we believe some of those lone players will play. I think that was the conclusion. However, towards the season when everyone's back, maybe it won't be as Chelsea Academy Central
I think
as
Mount,
we would like.
I think Mount will play a lot.
But Mason Mount, I agree, is someone that has a lot of potential. And Lampard saying he didn't have players that he wanted, he worked with him last season, same as Tomori. So that could work in Mount's favour for one of those midfield roles. However, the final little break will then bring us to the Gareth Bale discussion that you've all wanted to hear about. And then some little thoughts on other interesting transfers that have or have not happened so far this summer. So for the final section of today's Squawker Talker, we will be talking about Gareth Bale, who perfectly and poetically actually did come on and score against Arsenal in the latest pre-season friendly, despite the fact that he apparently refused to come on against Bayern Munich and that Zidane had treated him as a disgrace and that Bale wanted to see out his contract, etc. A lot of the situation is well known, especially well known is... or are his stats compared to Zidane at Real Madrid, which if you haven't seen, I don't know where you've been looking. But the question we had, and Just Kuda has appeared again, so thank you again for getting involved, is what is more realistic for Bale? A return to the Premier League, Spurs or Man United potentially, or a potential reunion with Ancelotti, or is there another place he will end up this season? Before we answer that specifically though, Mo, you said... as we were preparing this little session, that you have a lot to say on Gareth Bale at Real Madrid. We can't hear all of it at the moment, but your understanding of the situation and why someone that only Cristiano Ronaldo has scored more Champions League final goals than, Brazilian Ronaldo only scored two more goals at Real Madrid than Bale. Bale has won four Champions Leagues, the joint most successful British player in European Cup history, not just Champions League era.
Yeah.
How has this relationship deteriorated?
It never started. That's the thing. It was always like Bale was signed in that summer 2013, right, Real Madrid signed Isco from Malaga. Isco was the hot property. He got Malaga to the quarterfinals of the Champions League the season before. Everyone's going crazy. Real Madrid started La Liga playing a 4-3-2-1 formation. I think they played 2-3 games, and Isco was amazing in every single game. And you're thinking, okay, this is the new thing. And then they signed Gareth Bale at the end of the window. And obviously, Ancelotti was manager then. You can't play Bale in a 4-2-3-1. 4-3-2-1. So you have to change formation. So they changed to a 4-3-3. Bale came in on the right. Isco basically disappeared out of the team because he can't play in a 4-3-3. And so I think immediately, right from the off, the fans in Madrid, the Spanish fans in Madrid, never really took to Bale. So it's like, oh, he's got Isco out of the team. And that was years ago. And then since then, look, he's been amazing. On paper, he is a Real Madrid legend, right? There's nothing, three Champions League final goals, including an overhead kick. You know, he's the guy, his goal basically delivered La Decima. I know it was Di Maria was a better player in the final, but he was the one that scored the goal. You know, the amazing cup final goal against Barcelona.
Where I was going to say.
5 yards off the pitch, runs back on, leaves Barca for dead. And that goal turned their season. Remember, Real Madrid could easily have won nothing that season, but that goal gave them momentum and belief that they could win everything. They were very close. They even almost came close to even winning La Liga. They could have done a treble that season. They came close. They're really, really good in 13-14. And, you know, he was so good. And then, obviously, since then, he got them to the... He's the reason Zidane is a thing, by the way. Zidane treating him so harshly. Like, Zidane's Madrid were going to fall at the semi-final stage to Man City in that terrible semi-final. But Bale created an own goal out of nowhere in the second leg. And suddenly Madrid are in the final. Like, there's no... But the relationship never got started because, obviously, the Isco thing. And then also just the fact that he doesn't speak the language very well or well enough to communicate with fans and with the press, which means whether he can... I mean, the players are saying he can talk, he can speak conversationally Spanish, but obviously he doesn't feel comfortable enough talking to the press, so the fans don't hear him speak Spanish. So the fans think he can't speak it. He doesn't want to learn the language. You know, and he seems a bit standoffish. He's a bit... Bit different.
He's not necessarily the most like outgoing or extroverted footballer, is he?
He's just a nice guy, and I think if you can't hear him speak, you don't know he's a nice guy. And like, so English, anyone who speaks, who knows English knows how lovely Gareth Bale is because you hear him talk and you're like, oh my god, he's so nice. But if you're Spanish, you've never heard him speak Spanish. You don't know how nice he is. You're just like, here's this guy who isn't quite as good as Cristiano.
And is always injured. That is one of the major factors of why you wouldn't want to keep him.
That's the other thing. The reason why I think Zidane and him never got on is because Zidane's best season, the season by far where his Real Madrid were really, really legitimately brilliant, was 16-17. And Bale basically missed that whole season through injury. And I think whether or not there's a correlation there, Zidane, I don't think, can get the idea out of his head. We were great when he wasn't here. Mm. He's come back and we weren't that good and we scraped our way to the Champions League final, won the Champions League, and he was great. But objectively, they were good in 16-17.
But that's not necessarily... that's fair for Zidane to make that assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
Genuinely believe Bale is not good enough, what has then soured this whole thing is the way that certain comments have been made they both seem against each other rather than just like...
There's two ways of looking at it, really. Like, his refusal to leave, Gareth Bale's refusal to leave, is probably holding up or preventing Zidane from signing players that he wants, such as Pogba.
Yeah.
And it might not be an emotion-fueled thing when Zidane came out and basically went public with the fact that Bale's not in his plans. It might just be a pragmatic move to try and force Bale's agent and Bale to sort of find a new club.
Mm. But it's Bale's agent that is...
Because basically what's probably happening is that they're just refusing to leave. They're on a great contract. Why would you? Real Madrid, the only way is down. By the sounds of things, he's enjoying life in Madrid. But basically there's no way they can force Bale and the agent to leave. The only thing they can really do is go public and hope that applies some level of pressure, because it just basically... It's essentially humiliating Bale, really, to get him to leave, because now he has to sort of go through a whole season, which I think is the likely outcome, by the way. I think he'll just refuse to leave, and I think it's maybe a bit too late in the window.
Golf.
Exactly. So he'll have to do that for a season, which is going to affect his reputation. And essentially, like I said, it just embarrasses him.
He's got a massive contract, both in time span and wages.
Yes.
That is the major sticking point, isn't it?
He was the world's best paid player for a couple of weeks before they renewed Ronaldo's.
Florentino Perez loves Gareth Bale, right? Gareth Bale, like Karim Benzema before him, is one of his signings. He wants very much wants Bale to be the star of his side, right? Or maybe now Hazard as well, because he knows that Cristiano was very much Ramon Calderon's player. Ramon Calderon never shut up about it. It's like, I signed him, it was my deal. So Perez could never take credit for that. He wanted Kaká first. Kaká got injured all the time. So then he's like Benzema and then now Bale. He wants his guy. And even Hazard now, I guarantee you, he will see Hazard as someone Zidane has recruited, because Zidane obviously been going on about Hazard for years. So he want Bale. He very much wants Bale to be a thing at Madrid. And I think Zidane doesn't, for you know, fair reasons. He doesn't waver in his plans. But Zidane's gone about it very brusquely. And I think Bale is, you know, it's just a bit rich. Like, because obviously the ideal time for Bale to leave would have been last year. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, really the ideal time to leave for Bale in terms of pure minutes would have been after Kiev. I know he then had his heroic moment against Liverpool and everything. But if he had left the year before after they beat Juventus, I think that was in Kiev. Or was it Liverpool? I don't know. Anyway, after they beat Juventus, if he left then, that would have been perfect for Bale. Because then he would have left, you know, he would have got a full season of football, 17, 18, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, so he should have left after Liverpool as well. Didn't leave. At some point, he's got to realise, look, if I'm going to keep playing football, I need to go. Mm. Obviously, Jonathan Barnett, his agent, is digging his heel in because he doesn't want Bale to be seen as to be forced out. Yeah. And, you know, trying to take control of the narrative, it's very difficult. I think ultimately, if Man United were really interested, I think he would have been like, okay, you know what? Peace out. We're going to go to Man United. But I think Man United are sort of hesitant. Yeah. They're not really into it.
I think last season, maybe was the time to do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
But then with the recruitment strategy this season, they've already bought one Welsh winger.
Yeah. And they're going for young players. I think actually they should go for Bale because I just think he could be the experienced guy in their attack once Lukaku leaves. But clearly United aren't thinking that way. And I think other than the United, like you have to, you know, if you're either United or Barcelona or PSG or Man City or something, otherwise you are going down. Yeah. And like none of those clubs want to buy him. So
Bayern and China are also mentioned.
Yeah. The thing about United is by signing Bale, they're probably facilitating
Pogba's exit. That's the other thing. They probably don't want Bale to leave Madrid because then it makes it easier for them to get Pogba.
And then Spurs are obviously being mentioned, and Pochettino was asked about it. And the reason he's mentioned is because Gareth Bale, in the season before he was sold, scored 21 goals, 9 from outside the box, which is a Premier League record for a single season, was obscene for Tottenham, single-handedly winning them games.
Exactly,
won player of the year, Football Writers of the Year, and Young Player, one of those weird seasons where, despite already winning Players Player of the Year, he then won Young Player of the Year 2 years later, when he did what Ronaldo had done and collected every award. Tom, with Bale, I'm sure he must have been a scourge of West Ham for some games during that spell. Do you think a move back to Spurs is necessarily the right thing for either him and the club?
Well, it's actually funny you say the first part, because I was going to say I was at the game at Upton Park where we were drawing 2-2, and obviously Bale hit that shot from right outside the area and they won 3-2, I think it was in the last minute, and he infamously ran towards VS Boas, and then at the time I was pretty salty, but looking back it was a great goal and got nothing against him there. Moving back to Tottenham, obviously I'd love to see him back at Tottenham on a personal level, because like you said, he was so good under them. His whole transformation from the left back role all the way to the forward, the whole narrative of the story was great. Do I think it will happen? I personally don't think it will happen. Again, based on the fact that Tottenham splashed out so much money this window already, and
he would shatter their wage structure, wouldn't he? That's the thing.
Well, this is the main factor, really, is how much Ronaldo would prepared to subsidise his wages for whoever he goes, because I don't think anyone's really going to be able to match what he's currently earning.
Yeah, I mean, only like Man United, PSG, or Man City, and
he's like a 30-year-old player, so you wouldn't really.
But Bale would. I still think Bale would. Help Tottenham squad and improve it a lot.
Pochettino was quite coy, as sort of football cliches go. When asked about that, he said he's not involved.
I don't know.
Maybe, which is sometimes what managers do when there is something happening.
Bale's going to Spurs.
It's like a love story as well, isn't it? He goes back to the Tottenham, the club that I know he started at Southampton.
The club he forced to move away from.
We got him loads of money.
Well, we basically did. I mean, anytime a player leaves, they have forced that move.
I just think
Tottenham are only.
I thought when Real Madrid come knocking, it's like,
yeah, you can't
you force a move.
You bust a move.
I mean, Bale would walk into pretty much maybe not every, but most teams in the world.
If he is fit, I don't understand. Yeah. We've discussed all of those things about Gareth Bale, and despite being 30, if the one thing is if his calves...
Yeah, implode.
Yeah, that's the thing that... But if you objectively take Gareth Bale in what he does at his, in his best moments, and if you think of every player like that,
I reckon
there's not many people faster, stronger, kick the ball harder. Like he's one of the most explosive wingers on his day that you'll find.
Besides PSG, Barcelona, Man City, I reckon he walks into every other team in the world. I think besides those three, because they've got an abundance of top guys, I think he walks into every other team in the world. He's so good. I mean, Bayern, you would have said maybe not as well, but now they need him.
So just quickly on the Man City point, it's like, I know Leroy Sané doesn't walk into the team. Gareth Bale in his prime was doing what Leroy Sané did.
That's true.
He was playing on the, when he broke through and when he ended Maicon's career, he was a left foot player on the left wing and
just true.
Weaving inside and out, smashing the ball across goal, cutting it back. Then became on the right, as Tom said, cutting in, hitting it, played in number 10. Now plays up front for Wales.
He's a very special player.
In every attacking position possible. And I just think it's sad to see his career end like that, because I think you forget how good he was. And as I said,
it's not ended. He might get a really big move and then win the Champions League with someone else.
I mean, you know,
you've said that you think he's going to finish the season
at Real Madrid.
But
I think he'll stay for another season. But then he's got a few more years after that.
You can see he still takes care of himself as well, because there was that anecdote from Courtois who said he refused to go to the Real Madrid player party because it would overlap with his bedtime.
I think that's not necessarily the taking care of himself. I think that's one of the reasons they all don't like it. It's because he goes to bed early.
And to then get up and work out tomorrow.
Yeah. You'd hope. I think he just likes a British bedtime.
He is a tank, though, as well, to be fair. Yeah. Look at the guy. I mean, he's built like a, you know... Like
that's what I mean. He got almost too big in the sense when he went to Real Madrid. If you're that explosive and you've got that much muscle, the injury...
Yeah. I mean, look, Cristiano Ronaldo, as an example, is his recent excellence that he's had has come because he's dropped muscle and he's slimmed down a little bit. He was really massively bulky as well, and he's extended his career by losing a bit of weight and becoming a bit leaner and therefore not... Because, I mean, that kind of size does take a lot of work to maintain. Yeah. And, I mean, you can probably see why Bale's body is like, I can't hold all your muscles in, Gareth. It's just his ligaments strain under the...
To finish this week's podcast, where will the hulking Gareth Bale be exploding next season? Tom?
Shall we come back to you?
Yeah.
Will you think Madrid?
Yeah, up and down the golf courses.
I think Lukaku to Inter, Martial wears the number 9 shirt again, Gareth Bale to Man United wears number 11, Ryan Giggs is air. Boom.
No. Because that means Pogba, as we said, to Real Madrid. I'd love to see Gareth Bale go to Napoli. Don't think he will go to Napoli.
Yeah,
because of the Ancelotti links that Owen mentioned as part of the question. I think it could end up with a China move. Based on wages.
That seems to have been played down by various reports.
Yeah, but Pochettino played it down.
He won't want to go to China.
You said that was the manager's playbook, playing things down. Was mean it's going to happen?
Well, no, Pochettino played it up. He said, oh, I don't know.
Played it up.
I'll tell you where he should go. He should go to MLS. He should go to the USA and just expose Zlatan.
Well, Zlatan's going to... Zlatan will say that.
Like Carlos Vela has already done.
Zlatan will say, where was I when I was 31 or 30? And then we'll get that. Despite what's annoying about Zlatan Ibrahimovic quickly is he says all that and it's really annoying, then he literally scored a hat trick in the dark. So whatever you say about him, at least he walks the walk and talks the talk. But that's enough of talking the talking for us this week. So it leads me to say thank you to guest Mohamed Butt. Thank you.
# peace out.
There you go. Another one.
Will
Hall, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tom Green, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And I will not be on next week's podcast, but we've got Rooney on the show. So look out for that.
Remember the name.
Remember the name.